Hi there, welcome to Halos of Home, a Radio Mariam podcast. I'm Serena, and for today's episode, we have Avadis Markaryan. Could you please introduce yourself for us very quickly?
Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Avadis, or Avo Markaryan. I am an Armenian from Syria, grown up in Aleppo. I moved around quite a bit. I lived in Lebanon, Armenia, and the U.S. And I've been on a crazy journey of self-discovery, and I'm hoping we're going to dive a lot more into those topics and enjoy the conversation today.
Question one. Is everyone at one point forced to accept that home is movement? That home isn't something we can grasp, that it eludes us in a way? Would you nominate a universal life event that forces each person to realize the elusiveness of home?
Well, okay. So that, from what I got, there's two parts to that question. Home is movement. I think when I chose movement as one of the topics, I was referring to more of a physical movement, not necessarily movement as moving around different countries or cities. But we can talk about that too.
Is that not physical movement?
It is physical movement, but I mean physical movement as in using your body to express something and that kind of movement more so than actually moving around in terms of, you know, relocating. But I can definitely answer about relocation. I think from what I've gathered so far in the 26 and a half years of my life, moving around four times, maybe even five, completely relocating and moving to a new country, I think from what I've understood, it's become more accessible for sure for people to move to different countries, to different cities. It's more of a thing than it was before. And that, I think, is bringing up the conversation of home even more than anything before. And the elusiveness of that, I would say, is because of that. Because now we have the feeling of like, oh, I can see maybe an Instagram post of Bali and someone is just so serene and peaceful there. And you're like, oh, that maybe feels like home to me. And I would want to try that. And so you're like, oh, I want to do everything to move there. And then you move and you try to find that. What I'm trying to say is the accessibility of movement in terms of relocation has definitely contributed to the elusiveness of, or the concept of home, or the understanding of home and the feeling of it. And there definitely is a big, from my understanding again, a big crisis, maybe even an identity crisis that is attached to that. There's a thing where people talk about, I don't know what research or whatever you want to say, that when you are presented with many options and many choices, that's actually bad for you. You get lost and, you know, then you're not satisfied at the end of the day. And I think that's what's happening on a much bigger scale in human history at this point. And relocation, movement, home is also a part of that. And when you're presented with so many choices, with so many options, obviously if you are privileged enough to move, that is inevitably gonna give you an identity crisis. And you're like, okay, I can go and have fun in whatever it is, LA, the Caribbean, or, you know, wherever you want to go. And you're like, oh, I had so much fun here. Is this what home feels like? And then you try and do that, and then you're like, oh, maybe home is family. Let me, you know, move back to where my family is. And then you're like, oh, but I hate my my parents, for example. And then you're like, oh, so where's family? Where's home? And then you're like, maybe friends. And you're like, okay, no, but you're constantly moving around. Choices that you're making, there's so many options that you have, is definitely going to give you a feeling of crisis, and you're not going to know how to grasp that feeling of home. But I think eventually you land on something where it doesn't feel so elusive anymore. It feels somewhat tangible. It feels somewhat holistic within you, whether you find that within constantly moving around or whether you find that in people. I know we're going to talk about that too, or something else, whatever it is, whatever you find that actually feels like home to you and you're like, huh, I can touch this in some way. I think that's when that elusiveness kind of goes away and you're, okay, I think I have something here that I can hold on to. And that's when you start feeling like home, maybe just within some parts of you, even if it's 20%, you still have to figure out the rest of the 80%. But I think movement, to go back to it, forgot the second part. I would love for you to repeat that, but I think that's when movement is actually very important to me. In my life, having moved around so much, it's shown me in many ways that moving has helped me figure out the tiny details, all the dots that I've connected, and seeing all the patterns like, oh, I've been here for this many years, and this is what I liked, and then I've moved there, this is what I like from there, and then I moved to another country, and this was a challenge, this was not, this felt like home. And so what's the pattern? What are the things that are connecting in my brain and heart, let's say, and soul, if you want to include that, that feel like home? So what's that puzzle of home that I'm trying to piece together? And moving around has definitely helped me figure that out.
Does the movement make you feel more free or unfree? The fact that you've been to so many places, and I'm wondering, does it lock you in a state of perpetual nostalgia for all the places that you used to live in, but perhaps it's not so accessible for you to spend long periods of time there? And even if you were, it would be completely different, like a renewed experience.
Yeah, I think, at least in my case, there's a bit of a paradox, I would say. It's not necessarily that I feel the nostalgia of where I've lived and what I've experienced there and whatnot. I think you can, in many ways, recreate what you've had and what you've felt like home, or what has felt like home for you, and recreate it in the present moment. But the paradox for me has been, I feel very free in the sense that I know I can move around now. I know I can adapt very quickly. Movement has become such a, not necessarily convenience, but such a natural element of who I am, that I'm very quick to, okay, I can just move to another country. I know exactly what I need to do for myself for me to adapt as quickly as I can. And then, yeah, that basically, that skill, I guess, that I've cultivated has presented a sense of freedom where I know I can just go anywhere and live and make a life out of it. However, that also gives me the sense of, okay, but if I'm, like you said, if I'm going somewhere and like, oh, like I like all parts of these parts of wherever I'm living, and then these are not 100% for me, let me try somewhere else. So then I'm constantly bombarded with this, with these choices, and this feeling of maybe I'm never going to be satisfied, fully satisfied with where I'm living. And so it's the paradox of, oh yeah, I have so many choices and I have the freedom. Again, if you're privileged enough, and I've done all of this with a Syrian passport, so it's not the best in terms of travel. But, you know, sometimes life just smiles at you and you smile back and you take that road, and wherever it leads you, you go. But being privileged, I want to acknowledge that it's very important, and making those moves gives me the freedom. But also, this is a new feeling for me that I'm kind of experiencing or tapping into more within myself, and realizing that sometimes I feel like I don't belong anywhere. And that's a startling feeling. It's shocking. You don't really know what to do with it. But that kind of kills the freedom of it. You know you're free, but you're like, well, what's the point of that freedom if I'm never actually feeling the belonging, if I'm not actually feeling the freedom in the moment to fully be present? So that's where the paradox comes in for me. It's a beautiful thing to have that freedom. I appreciate it so much. But also, I'm at a point in my life where I feel like I need to maybe dial down the, you know, choosing that kind of always move, always free to move type setting that I have on. Maybe turn that off for a little bit and try and settle somewhere and try and build a life, actually, to cultivate that sense of stability, that sense of home, if that makes sense.
Why are you craving stability now?
For so many reasons. I went through these past 5 years, I should say, after leaving Lebanon. I was in Armenia for a year, and then I knew I wasn't going to stay in Armenia. It was a temporary, let's say, a long-term visit, however you want to call it, because I was going to finish up my undergraduate degree, and I knew that I was either going to apply for a job somewhere else, and I wasn't going to stay in Armenia, or I was going to do my master's somewhere in Europe or in the US. And that's what ended up happening. I went for my master's to the US, and I lived there for 2.5 years, got done with my master's, stayed there, worked for a little bit. But then after the US, I moved back to Armenia. I've been here since last January, so a little over a year and a half. But what I'm trying to say is these 5 years have been very pivotal for me, in a sense where literally I was pivoting left and right between countries and within myself as well, to try and find what I'm actually looking for, that sense of belonging, that sense of home. At first, I thought it was going to be, maybe we're going on a bit of a tangent here, but at first I was like, okay, I'm going to move away from what I know and I'm going to go into the unknown completely and try and make a life and build a life for myself in the US. Most Armenians maybe choose LA, maybe choose Boston, wherever Armenians are. But I went to Minnesota, where there's maybe 50 Armenians. And we do have a church there, and it's a beautiful church. But I just wanted to be as far away as possible. And I did that. That was kind of the trying to figure out, where is my stability, to answer that question. And I thought I was going to find it in my job. I thought I was going to find it in a relationship there. I thought I was going to find it in a downtown apartment, or, you know, the monthly checks you get that are like, oh, my bank account is increasing, I love it. But at the end of the day, I realized it does help, yes, 100%, for you to find that stability, but it's not necessarily what you will find stability in. And so I had to tweak those things in my head to understand those and experience them, to come to the realization that stability for me is important, and I don't want to keep moving around. And if I have not found it in the complete unknown, where I tried to build a life for myself out of nothing, let's say, then maybe I should start looking somewhere else. And that was my journey back to home as people. This is tying into my decision to go back to Lebanon and create more stability.
Before we talk about home as people, I want to ask, in your journey of emptying yourself, you didn't use that exact language, but essentially in the nothingness, in the unknown, trying to locate your sense of stability. And then you also mentioned how sometimes you feel this sense of not belonging to anything, to the world. Do you think that both of these things could be attributed to the fact that your sense of self and your sense of identity is bigger than what the world can offer? So if you're searching for it in the unknown, in the lack of stability, I don't know how to tie this together, but
lack of familiarity is probably what it was.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking you searched in the unknown, and then you also went the other route with searching in what was known. But both of those things, the outcome is still a sense of unbelonging that will creep up occasionally.
Yes.
So would you say that this perhaps communicates that what you're searching for is bigger than what the world can offer?
That question to me brings me to the soul level, if you want to talk about that. So all of this happened for me in the past 5 years, and in many ways is still continuing, trying to figure out who I am, like who I really am at my core. And I think a lot of the religions talk about this, a lot of the spiritual world scene, whatever you want to call it nowadays, is talking about this too. There's definitely something bigger than you that you tap into, and that's who you really are at the core, let's say, on a soul level. And I definitely share that opinion, idea, sentiment, however you want to call it. There's so many aspects to it. The unknown for me was being away from everything that my identity has attached itself to. A lot of it was being Armenian.
Really?
Yes. Because growing up in Syria, Herag is here with us in the studio, is my friend. We've grown up in Aleppo, Syria, and Aleppo has had one of the biggest Armenian diaspora communities in the world. Likewise in Lebanon and some other places, obviously the US as well. But in terms of protecting or creating, let's say, this bubble of Armenian-ness, Aleppo and or Syria and Lebanon have done a superb job. And so we were talking about this at lunch today with some other people. I grew up in Syria. Obviously, I learned Arabic at school, so I understood everything. It was around me in general. There was no issue with that, but I never really used Arabic in my day-to-day. We spoke Armenian everywhere. We went to an Armenian school, Armenian community centers, cultural centers, and even I was giving this example of you would go to the barbershop and it's an Armenian guy. You want to go get meat from the market or whatever. Can't remember what it's called. Everyone's Armenian, you know, you just go to everyone. You need a doctor, you go to the Armenian doctors. So my identity was so attached to the Armenian-ness within me, which there's absolutely nothing wrong in that. And I'm going back to that now. I'm coming back to it. But I needed to get away from that. And so the unknown for me was going to the US, where there's very little Armenians, practically none. And that's where I was like, I need to know who I am if I am not Armenian. Obviously, attached to that is a lot of the societal pressure, a lot of the societal norms that comes with being Armenian. But the unknown was that. And then the trying to find it in the known, like you said, the stability in the known is what I tried to do. Is when I don't have my Armenian-ness, then who am I? Then I am my job. I am my relationship with a partner. I am my, let's say, English speaking, you know, I'm a guy who went to the US when he was 22 and I have an American accent. Everyone has noticed that. So I was like, oh, maybe I am this, you know, fluent American speaking guy. I was trying to just like grasp who I am if I am not Armenian. And eventually it got to a point where I completely collapsed in a sense where I was like, I am none of these things. I don't know who I am anymore because being Armenian is such a big part of my identity. And within that, I'm going to come to the something bigger than myself. In that journey, it's a bit of a, you know, mystical thing for me to talk about, but I went on this journey. I broke up at some point, and then, you know, after you break up, you're like, what is the world? What's life? And you know, so I went on that path and it led me to faith, I would say, or, you know, a connection to something bigger than myself because I did not have that for a while at that point. And so on that journey, at some point I was meditating every day for at least an hour and every morning I would do that. And about 2 months in or something like that, a lot of coincidences were happening in my life. And all of those seemed to lead me to believing into something bigger than myself, into believing in God, believing in a higher consciousness, the universe, whatever you want to call it. And so on that journey, one morning, it kind of reached like its peak. And I remember I woke up right before meditating. I looked out my window. And I was like, God, like so many weird things have been happening lately. And it seems like you're the one who's talking to me. If it is you, just give me a sign. And this is not tied to any religion or anything. I'm just talking about a higher power, something bigger than myself. And so when I said that and then I started meditating, during the meditation, I had a crazy experience where I felt the presence of something bigger than myself is how I'll frame it. And it lasted, I don't know for how many minutes. There was no concept of time at that point or none of it. And I felt so connected, so present with that consciousness, with God, with, you know, again, whatever you want to call it. And I completely transformed after that. And that's when I knew that my sense of belonging, my identity, is really not tied to any of the things that I was trying to focus on or trying to tie my identity to. Whether it was the job, whether it was the ex, whether it was my English or Arabic, you know, anything, my friends there. And that kicked off this whole journey of, okay, I'm going to try and go back to my roots and try and dig that out completely to try and touch that core again. Mm-hmm. That was my mission because I felt something that was so powerful. I was like, I want to be there. I want to be there the whole time, every day, every minute. And on
you
that,
to be where, sorry, in that moment of transformation?
Yeah, well, in that state of bliss that I felt as the mic falls away. But yeah, so that moment of bliss was what I was after for a very long time after that. But obviously, you can't be in that moment forever. But to bring it back to the something bigger than myself and belonging, I definitely do know that I don't belong to just who I am here and now and my identity and my physical identity. There's definitely something bigger than myself, whether you want to call it God again, et cetera, et cetera. I belong to that consciousness. My soul definitely belongs to that energy. And that's definitely home, 100%. I have no doubt about that. I've felt it. And there's no feeling like that in this realm. So home for me is 100% there on a soul level. But now the question still arises. I'm still here and I have to have a life. You know, not have to, but you know, I have a life.
Yeah.
And I have to live it if I want to. And so where do I find home? What is home for this identity? So that separation happened for me of home as an attachment to things, rather than now I am looking at it from a perspective of home as it is to this identity that I have. Does that...
Can you explain? I got the first one about you used to look at it as an attachment, but now how is it different?
In many ways, people experience it in the same way. If you haven't necessarily had an experience like that where you feel the separation of the, you know, identity and soul, whatever, it's just that going after what you feel like is home and what feels like home from the inside,
yeah,
rather than trying to find it on the outside, is kind of what is the difference now.
How is this more interior search for home? How is this involved in your decision making process to go to Lebanon?
So I actually wasn't planning on going to Lebanon and wasn't even on my mind at all. My friends have been telling me to come back, not move back, but just to visit them. And I do have family there as well. And everyone was saying, come on, like, we miss you. It's been 2 years. You haven't been. 2 years ago, I went for 10 days. I was out of it. I did not want anything to do with Lebanon. I was like, I'm going to go back to the U.S. My life there is perfect, blah, blah, blah. This was before all the transformation happened. And so I denied Lebanon as a place for me to feel at home completely. And a month ago, I was like, I'm going to do this trip, whatever. If I have to do it, I'll go. I'll have fun. I need a break anyways. So I'll just do that and come back and see what I want to do with life. And I went, and from the first moment that I was there, I got out of the airport. I was like, why am I not here? It's just that feeling of, this makes sense. It feels like home. I have friends that I grew up with and, you know, those critical years of adolescence and, you know, moving into adulthood, you're doing all sorts of crazy things with your friends and having fun. And so all of that was in Lebanon and with my friends there. It just made sense that I felt like home with them. It made sense that I felt like home with the family that I have there, because we have a full, you know, all members of the family, let's say, present. So I can spend time with parents, I can spend time with grandparents, I can spend time with a lot of relatives. And so that sense of community that I rediscovered there, I was like, this makes absolute sense. And this actually feels like home. At that moment, or now after the transformation, I should say, this is where the difference is for me between before and after. Before, I would have said, but no, I need a high-paying job in the U.S. I can do a lot more in the U.S. Maybe I'm valued in a different way in the U.S.
Yeah,
I can bring more as a foreigner and whatnot. I can have an apartment in downtown. I can do this. I can have a better car. All sorts of material things you want to chase in life. And all the friends, you know, everything that comes with it. I would have gone to that before. Because I can do more. I can achieve more. I can reach that top and reach this and reach that. But now, no. I do not need to chase any of that. Because that obviously didn't bring me the fulfillment that I wanted to feel. And the sense of home, the feeling of belonging and home. And I feel that in Lebanon. So now I'm like, yes, this makes complete sense. And now that I have this, which is the base, I can build the life that I want on top of this. Because this is the foundation, the sense of home, that can be the foundation, the pillars. And then I can build the home on top of the little house. And not the other way around.
What would the foundations be?
For me, I'm going to regurgitate what I saw the other day. I heard an interview, and I think before that it was a TED Talk. It's this one guy, I really can't remember his name. He's a Harvard professor. He's done his research on what makes people happy in life. And he has four pillars, let's say. And it's faith, family, friends, and a meaningful job. And I think that's, I mean, if you have all of that, obviously you're killing it in life. But for me, it seems like the biggest pillar, let's say, or let's say not even the base level. You know, when you're constructing a building, you dig a lot deeper than the ground floor and you're putting the pillars, I guess, whatever you want to say, from deeper down. And then you go up to the ground floor. That's when you start building. Yeah. And for me, the absolute foundation, which is the deeper than the ground floor, is the people. And I have that in Lebanon. And so that for me is the biggest foundation where I can feel at home with the, for me, it's the Western Armenian community and specifically the people that I have in my life in Lebanon. I have so many great friends, so many great people in my life all over the world. I obviously love them, everyone. But the feeling that I get with them, specifically in Lebanon, is the foundation for me. It seems like. So this is going to be another experiment for me. But for now, that's what it feels like. And that's where I'm trying to go. On top of that, I will start building. When I have the people as the foundation, which I already have, now I have to bring in the faith aspect to it, which is already in me, but how I want to practice it when I am in Lebanon. And family and friends are the foundation, if we want to go on the four things that the Harvard professor mentions. So the family and friends are the foundation for me.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to faith and work, I will try and see how I can practice that and build those foundations as well in Lebanon.
Do you expect that the relationships that you have in Lebanon will have changed drastically, or what are your expectations? Are you almost preparing yourself for how you're going to be received when you go back, or you have complete faith that it's going to be open arms and that the solidity or the history of those relationships is going to achieve a predictable response?
I think it's going to achieve a predictable response where it contributes to the stability. From what I've learned so far is when you have a high, you're going to have a low. And it seems like that's how life works and how our energies work, I guess. What I expect is a predictable, we're very glad you're back. Let's see how we can live together. Let's see how we can build a community together. And so it's more, I'm very happy you're back. Not a crazy, oh my God, like, let's go party. And then you crash. Doesn't mean that we're not going to have fun. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of fun. But the expectation is it's going to be a stable, glad you're back. Let's work on this. Let's try and keep this flow going of, you know, good vibes, whatever you want to say.
Yeah. As you were quoting the Harvard professor, this is something I was thinking about just before the interview as well, about happiness as compared with self-respect. Which one of these would you value more and why?
I think self-respect probably more. I'm not entirely sure if you can be happy if you don't respect yourself.
Yeah.
So I would definitely put self-respect first. And if I know from myself that I haven't respected, if I don't respect myself, I will not have committed to the work that I've been doing these past 5 years and the work that I will continue to do. And so that definitely is, a foundation to all those things that we've been talking about, the people and the friends and family and whatnot. All of these things are somewhat external. And so obviously they bring up feelings within you, and that's internal and that's great. But the relationship that you have with yourself is probably the foundation for everything.
Mm.
So again, if I don't respect myself, I'm not going to respect myself enough to see that I am feeling at home in Lebanon. You can respect yourself, I guess, in two ways, and this is also a different conversation of, like, you know, the ego respect versus the actual loving respect towards yourself that is not based in the ego. But that's a different conversation, and self-respect is my answer, for sure, is the foundation. And based on that, you can do the work. You definitely have to do the work, whether it's a psychological journey for you, whether it's going to a therapist, whether it's through faith, whatever the journey is for you, you cannot escape the work. And when you decide that you're going to respect yourself 100%, when you do the work, you will find happiness. At least that's my hope. Again, I've been on this journey, and it seems like just now, just recently, life has started to show that happy side to myself. And so I have hope. I think that's how it works. You have to respect yourself, do the work, and at the end of the tunnel, light comes out. That's the happiness that you feel.
Mm. So kind of we can play the game to get happiness. If we do all the right things, then there's that reward at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. Yeah. If you want to elaborate more on that.
It turns happiness into a mathematical thing, in a way, when I don't think it's necessarily cause and effect.
It's not cause and effect, and I don't think that it is mathematical. At least it's not in my head. On this journey that you go on, you cannot calculate anything. At least that's how it was for me. I thought I was calculating things, and I thought I had it all figured out. But everything that was thrown at me showed me that I cannot calculate anything, and I cannot predict anything, because it is the complete unknown. That's where you find yourself, really. Find out who you are completely. And in the unknown, obviously, everything is unpredictable. You cannot calculate for anything. And so in my head, it's not mathematical, but it just seems that it just works like that. You have to do the work, and everyone's work is different, so I cannot tell you, hey, this is what you need to do, and you know, this is the prescription, and just follow this, and you'll find happiness. It's not how it works. So it's definitely not mathematical in that way. But the journey has patterns, is what I would say. I think just like anything in life, you know, patterns are everywhere if you look close enough. That's what I meant.
I understand it better now. So rather than do A to get B, it's rather that it follows a certain pattern, and that there are expectations attached to patterns.
Yes. And that journey also teaches you that if you are doing A in order to get to B, you will not get to B.
Yes, that's true, actually.
So you do have to let go of the expectations, and that's what the unknown teaches you.
Yeah. With your formulation of home as something that you build, is this a way that you've framed it in your mind after your transformation, or you've always seen home as something that you have to ask yourself what the foundations are, what the pillars are, and something that you build?
I guess I've never really thought very deeply about it. I didn't actually know that I had an issue with belonging necessarily before moving to the US. And that's when it all started to kick in for me. And obviously, that's when I started to dig deeper and, you know, try and find the fulfillment, happiness, whatever you want to call it. And so, what was the question again? So that I know that I'm answering.
I'm wondering if you've always seen home as something that you build, or is this a new revelation after your transformative moments?
Mm-hmm. It was definitely after the transformative moments.
Okay.
Including moving to the U.S. That was definitely a transformational moment. And so when I moved to the U.S., I remember very clearly and vividly, at one point I was in bed and I was like, I need to speak Western Armenian to someone, like, right now.
Really?
Yes. I was losing my mind. I was like, I'm not me anymore. This doesn't feel like me anymore. And luckily I have friends to call, you know, and do that with. And so that was a big moment. That was like, okay, this really is a big part of me. So, and in that moment, you're not really thinking, oh, maybe that's the feeling of home, you know. But looking back, that was me trying to piece it together and discovering what actually is home for me without even knowing it.
Can we talk a little bit about movement, physical movement, which you brought up in the beginning of the interview? Could you elaborate, please?
Yes. I love talking about this and even just thinking about it within myself. It's those happy moments where you feel like you're in complete flow or in flow state. You've probably heard of that. When I chose home as movement, that's what I had in mind. And to me, that has been sometimes when I'm playing basketball, for example, and I am playing the game. I am completely unaware of anything that is going on outside of me in that moment, moving around with the ball or maybe passing the ball, or just even when I don't have the ball and I'm trying to create space for another player or whatever it is. Hedag is smiling because he plays basketball too. He knows. It's such a beautiful thing to experience when you're in that flow state. I've had those moments sometimes when I'm just lying on the grass and looking up at a tree, you know, and it's so nice. Sun is out and it's green and I'm not really moving, but I can maybe see the trees, you know, moving. There's a bit of a wind. And so you're like, wow, you're in awe of something. And I think that's where I also feel at home. That's what reminds me of the mystical, if you want to call it, experience that I had during meditation. And so those moments I cherish very much and I appreciate very much, because you're out of your body. You're not in touch necessarily with material things going on around you. You're not in really, or not necessarily in touch, but you're not consciously paying attention to all the, you know, sadly, the wars going on everywhere in the world and what your bank account looks like. You could be the poorest person ever. Maybe you're depressed at home, but when you're on a little boat, maybe you have a lake nearby. You don't even have to have a boat. You're just hiking and you just watch this bird moving around and chirping. You transcend whatever you are experiencing in life. That to me is a great feeling of home. It's a different feeling of home. Even when you're praying, you're tuning out completely. And so that, to me, is, it might even be the highest form of home feeling that I achieve, I guess, or that I get to achieve.
As you were saying that, I was thinking about prayer and how for me it always feels so timeless.
Yeah.
And there's this philosopher, Simone Weil, and she thinks that true prayer is when your attention is totally being given to God. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, there have been so many moments that I've been in nature and I almost am not prepared to transcend my earthly reality. Mm-hmm. And I don't care that there's a beautiful bird or that the tree is swinging a certain way, because I'm so in my own thoughts and feelings. I'm not present. So I think there's a preparedness aspect that has to go into this sense of bliss and this sense of transcendence. And then that would relate to attention. If you're not paying attention, then you're just going to be there, but nothing is going to be happening for you.
Yes.
You're just there as a soldier, kind of, rather than someone experiencing the motions of what's happening around you.
Yeah, 100%. You have nothing to add to that.
Relating this back to home as people, do we become different people, attract different people, and define different people as home based on the culture we're in? So in your case, you've lived in Syria, you grew up there, were born there. You've lived in the States, in Lebanon and Armenia. Is it those four countries?
Yes.
do you define different people as home depending on what place you're living in? And do you find that the culture of that place will also determine how you yourself provide a sense of home to other people and then the sorts of people who you would define as home for yourself?
Let me try and answer it this way. Hopefully, we'll get to the... I don't know. Okay, so home is people... I was talking a lot about the Western Armenian community and how I feel at home there. I think there's obviously a lot of truth to that. And it feels very true within me. Because I have grown up in the Western Armenian community in Syria, in Aleppo, Syria. So people like Hrak... We were talking about this the other day. We were at a cafe in Yerevan enjoying our time and having some some lemonade and whatnot. But we were talking about how both of us, we have a similar longing to, in Arabic we call it ade. What it means is like the sitting arrangement kind of thing. I don't know what the literal translation is, but it's basically the hang, you know, in slang terms, you know. When you hang with your friends.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the hang. The ade is the hang. And we've grown up in, you know, our circles and with the friends that we've had. And mind you, we haven't been in the same friend group growing up. And so we both feel this longing and belonging to the hang with our friends, the Western Armenian community, where you're just there, you're very present. You do not care what you're talking about. You do not care what you're actually eating. You do not care what you're drinking. And whatever the topic is, you're letting it flow. You might even shout at your friend. You know, you might curse them in some way. You might, you know, get... Obviously, no fights are breaking out, hopefully. But it's that hang where you're just... In English, they say you're shooting the S word. I don't want to... and so you're just having fun. You know, you're just talking about different stuff. And you might be having coffee, you might be having some alcohol, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It could be just food. But you're so present and you're just with your friends. That's it. And we both love that. We love it. And so I definitely feel at home in those moments. Again, it's similar to that bliss kind of that you feel when you're in the flow state and whatnot. And so that is a part of our flow state, for example. And I love that. I love that hang. I crave it. And my soul craves it. And I do feel at home when I'm in those moments. And outside of that, in different cultures, in different countries, for example, I've replicated that in Lebanon, which, again, is a big part of my decision-making at the moment. And outside of Lebanon, in Armenia, for example, because there's this a bit of a dissonance, I would say, between what I know to be Armenian within me and what I have found to also be Armenian outside of myself in Armenia. A different culture, a different lifestyle, a complete different way of being Armenian, which I'm sure it is also different in Australia. It's different in France, for example. And so because I was a kid, it was such a big shock for me when I first came here. I didn't know that there was an Eastern Armenian. I thought every Armenian spoke Western Armenian. And I thought everywhere looked the same. Centers, the community centers, the cultural centers and whatnot. But that's not the reality, obviously. But what I'm trying to get to is what I had here with locals is not necessarily a feeling of home, unfortunately, because of the difference of the culture. In some ways, yes. I remember this one friend that I had in school. I did 8th grade, 9th grade, and 10th here in Armenia. And so I had a friend at the first school that I was at, 8th and 9th grade, local guy. I adore him to this day. And I saw him on the street the other day, and I go back and forth, so I don't really get to see him so often, but I saw him, and I was like, hey, I truly miss you. That guy, he felt like home to me in some way. But he was different than others. I don't know if that says anything about the connection that I have with people outside of the Western Armenian community. He didn't necessarily get along with everyone else, with the locals. But, I mean, he himself is a Eastern Armenian, but we just vibed really well.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I miss you too. And I was thinking about it the other day. He said, you're the only guy from school. In my head, I said, he's worth reaching out to. He's worth talking to. I wonder he's doing well. I was like, same. This is, I'm very happy we're having this conversation. And so he definitely felt like home to me. He's probably never going to listen to this, but his name is Mark. Love the guy. And that was kind of my experience in Armenia. And then I stayed in a Western Armenian bubble for good or bad reasons, you know. However, I do feel a sense of belonging and a feeling of home to the nature in Armenia. That's definitely something I can relate to, something I can feel blissful within and about. I know you were asking about people specifically. In the US, it was the same. I never really got along with most of Americans. I get along with everyone.
That's why I was surprised.
Yeah, no, I get along with everyone. When I say I didn't get along, I mean like I didn't feel that connection. Yeah, feel that deep connection. I did get along with mostly everyone, but didn't feel that deep connection with a lot of the Americans that I've met there. However, again, because of the cultural difference, lifestyle, maybe way of thinking, and all that comes with having grown up somewhere else in a different culture. But I have two friends that to this day I am in contact with, three actually, and I love them to death. I'm not a big texter. I hate texting. And I'm not the best at keeping in touch with long-distance friendships. But I always say, you can text me. If it's urgent, obviously, please call me and I'll call back. And if you're texting me and you don't see a reply, even after a few months, know that I am going to reply someday. Be sure, and I will. I just don't know when. But if it's urgent, please call me. Anyways, but this one friend, we haven't talked or communicated since last October and maybe even September, and she just got engaged, and she out of the blue just sent me a voice note, a voice memo, sent me the pictures of her engagement, told me all about it, and I was like so happy for her. And that to me is, again, it's a feeling of home, it's a feeling of deep connection. And I have felt that with three people, let's say, from Minnesota. And I don't know what the, you know, secret sauce is. I don't know how that feeling of home actually generates within anyone. But to me, I think it's just a deep connection. And a lot of times you just know that this person is going to be important for you. And you're feeling that sense of home with that person. And it's usually those moments where no matter where you are in life and what grounds you're on, whether it's American, Australian, Armenian, whatever, you're in that moment again with that person and nothing else matters. You're just having fun over whatever it is. Or you're talking about something very, you know, emotional and depressing, and that's still, you're being very present in that moment with that connection. And so I guess to answer the question very long way, you can definitely feel the deep connection, that feeling of home with other people in different cultures. But I don't know if there is a specific way to get to that. I think it's just a feeling. You're like, huh, I can see this being something greater than ourselves. You know, I can see this becoming a very deep connection.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the sense of unbelonging because of something bigger than yourself. I think that when two people come together, or when a community of persons comes together, that it ignites the bigness of all of your lives and existences and the connection that's 100%. Binding you all. And there's such a beauty to that.
100%. I was late to the game, maybe a little bit, maybe not, to realize that. Because all my life I've been trying to do everything for myself, and that has proved me wrong in every which way possible. And so now I've come to realize that if you're building a community, if you're doing things together, there's connections, solid connections, deep connections. You're just amplifying, like you said, that feeling of home, that feeling of, of belonging, that blissful energy that you're feeling. Again, like you said, such a beauty to that. And it's, you can't top that in any way. You know it when you feel it. And it's just amazing.
We can end on this beautiful reflection. It's the perfect ending point, I think.
Perfect. I'm happy.